another podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.
From the intersection of technology and public accounting,
it's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession. Tech2Go is sponsored by ADP.
Good morning, Greg LaFollette, recording Intersection Live, Tech2Go, episode 13. We're rolling right along. We got the whole gang here. My buddy out in the Pacific Northwest, good morning, Brent.
How are you, Greg? How are you guys?
Wonderful. Glad to hear from you. My other buddy over on the other side of the country, out in Virginia, Dave McClure. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon from the sunny Shenandoah Valley.
And finally, rounding out the group, as is usual, from somewhere other than home, Randy Johnston, down in the great state of Texas, right?
Yes, indeed. Very pleased to be with you today.
Well, great. Glad to have everybody here. So we're as we talked last month. That was episode 12 for the full year. This is our first edition for the new year. And as I kind of look back, I'll point out a couple of things to our listeners. As I get this question a lot, remember that for all of our Intersection Live podcasts, we do maintain show notes. So as my friends here are wont to do, they'll talk about products and services and companies and websites, and you don't have to scramble around. We'll put all of those in the show notes. You can go to the CPA Technology Advisor website, that's cpatechadvisor.com, or the way I do it, cpata.com, cheap and easy way, and just follow a couple of links there, and you'll very quickly get to the show notes, and it'll have all of that detail in it. It's a whole lot easier than scrambling around trying to write something down and wondering when I mumbled the name of some company and you couldn't quite understand it. That should make you a little bit happier. Secondly, if you're interested, and many people are, or occasionally we have guests who dial in, and I think we've got somebody listening on the line I can see right now. We'll bring that person in a little later and talk with them. If you are interested in joining us on TalkShoe, that's TalkShoe.com, you're certainly welcome to join us that way, and you can listen in and visit with us. We'll be recording episode 14 at 3:30 Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday, February 20th. So if you want to write that note down, and you can come back and join us, and we'd sure look forward to having you here and kind of stream us out and listen to us. And if you want to join, there's a facility there. You can kind of electronically raise your hand, and if you've got a question, maybe the group here can answer it, because I'll tell you what, if these three guys can't answer your question, it's about accounting technology, you're in big trouble, because I've got the best and the brightest here. Finally, if you'd like to just call in and comment or ask a question, whatever you'd like to do, we do maintain our toll-free number. It's 800-456-0864. And our extension is 2106. Just call, leave us a message, and if it's a nice message, we might even play it on the air. And if it's not, we probably won't. But that's kind of what we do here. Our podcast Tech2Go is now what I refer to as the granddaddy of Intersection Live, and we're sponsored by ADP. We're real grateful to the guys at ADP for stepping up. I think that shows great foresight in stepping up and sponsoring the profession's first regularly scheduled recurring podcast. And you know, these guys are bright guys. I was doing some looking just the other day. A friend of mine called, and he was actually considering selling his payroll practice, And so he was talking about selling it to ADP, and he asked me how deep was ADP. And I, you know, my assumption was, well, they got a really big office building because I've been in it. And I said, you know, I'm sure they're fine. Let's go look. They are one of only 7 companies in the U.S. that are rated AAA by both Standard & Poor's and Moody's. There's only 7 companies, and ADP is one of them. That, you know, there's, don't tell me there's not money in payroll, right? Big stuff. So, you know, they've got some interesting stuff over there. As I looked with my friend about what was going on, and I think by the end of our conversation, he decided, I think, not to sell his payroll practice, but rather just to partner with ADP, which is another thing they do, because he was running into problems with clients who, and I remember, you know, in my practice, running into clients who had all sorts of problems with things like, you know, workers' comp, and they wanted 401k plan or a POP plan or a simple IRA and something. And there's always all these different players involved that made it kind of a pain in the neck. And these guys over at ADP have done a pretty darn good job of making all of that stuff pretty transparent. So if that's where you're at and you're interested in that, I'd suggest you give them a pop over there and be sure to tell them that the only reason you're at all interested in them is because the guys on Tech2Go talked about them, and then we'll get sponsored for another year and we can keep hanging out. So guys, as I looked back at what we were doing a year ago and when we did our first couple of podcasts, and I actually went back and listened to them, and I would ask you to do one thing. Please don't go listen to them because they were pretty awful. But the content was good, but as we kind of struggled figuring out how to do this, we talked last year a lot about Vista and Office 2007. And, we had a lot of bugaboo about it, you know, who's going to do it, when we're going to do it, what are firms doing, what should they do, and all of that stuff. And Randy, I've heard you speak several times this summer about it, and I know you've been using Vista now for years and Office 07. I've got every machine I have is Vista and 07 now. And I'll let the other guys chime in on where they're at. But what are you seeing, Randy? You're out there talking to a lot of different firms. Are firms in, out, partway? What are you thinking? What are you seeing?
You know, from a CPA firm perspective, mostly out. That's the short answer. The Vista adoption rate has clearly only been from new machine acquisitions, and I think a lot of firms acquired products still run an XP as much as they could, and they've just begun doing the Vista desktop rollouts. The solution turned out to be virtualization to the problem of applications not being compatible.
Sure.
Now in the Office 2007, little different uptake there. Many of the firms were under open license agreements. Some early movers actually moved the whole firm across to Office 2007. Typically, they did an in-mass upgrade after doing the education. They encountered a few problems with maybe their engagement managers or those types of things, but they really said, you know, we think this is a good move.
Now, Randy, CCH and Thompson both finally got their engagement products up to solid interaction with 07. Is that accurate? That's what I'm saying?
That's what I believe is happening from all of the different IT administrators and so forth that I've talked to and watching several different organizations' news groups. That seems to be pretty accurate. The biggest issue is what we call the learning dip, if you will. There's going to be a loss of productivity during the early conversion of Office 2007, and over some period of time, the productivity seems to be higher because of the interface. I think more experienced users are having more trouble on the conversion than less experienced users. So the people who are less literate seem to be getting along better with Office 2007, and the more literate users are struggling because they remember the way it's done in the older products, and they are having a hard time shaking some of that off.
Brent, that sounds like the same conversation that you and I had about Windows and DOS. It was the people that didn't know any better that thought Windows was great, and our, those heavy-duty DOS users died hard, didn't they?
Yeah, it's very, very similar, and it's because of the significant change in the interface. You know, speaking of a year ago, we talked about the interactive guides that Microsoft has made available, and you know, we have found that if those interactive guides are made available either on an intranet or if they're just provided to end users individually with, you know, links to those interactive guides, they get along a lot better because they can use the interactive guide to see the old interface, do things the way they're comfortable doing it, and then the guide switches to the new interface and shows them how to do it with the new interface. The learning curve is greatly reduced when they use that particular tool.
Yeah, and the other tool that, you know, we've used and recommended pretty broadly is from Patrick Schmidt, the Ribbon Customizer. $30 a seat, but you can customize the ribbon and you can have the entire Office 2003 ribbon available. So it's kind of a last-minute cutover type of approach. You know, you can cheat. Some people have really said, I'm not sure I want to provide that crutch, but from a productivity vantage point, most users actually do try to use the new menu system, but it's like, I know how to do that. They go over and use the old menu system and they get their job done.
Somehow buying, upgrading a product, spending, you know, whatever it is, unless you're an open license, I guess theoretically you're still spending, but you spend money to upgrade your product, and you spend more money to make the product that you just upgraded act like the product that you upgraded from. Somehow I have trouble with that, but many people do it.
Well, you know, in that particular case, it's just a productivity call because, you know, $30, if you're, you know, messing around for 15 minutes you didn't otherwise have to mess around for, I think it's back.
Right.
And so as much as the crutch may not really feel appropriate, I understand why that's not a bad choice. But the other thing that's notable is there are clearly ways to do things faster in the Office 2007 product. And the further we go along, the more clear some of those tools and the new ways of doing things like lists in Excel, which is a, you know, radically different way of doing processing. If you understand the concept of the new way, you can see the productivity gains even in fundamental applications like Excel.
Right.
But I liken it to the firms when they had to finally make the transition from word processors, from WordPerfect over to Word. You know, guys who had invested years learning all those codes were completely lost. I have to admit, for the first couple of months, I was in agony using the new ribbon bars. I couldn't find anything. But it's pretty comfortable now and very productive now. And in the reviews I've been doing over the past couple of months, it's very heartening to see the number of companies that have finally responded and move their interface over to the new Office 2007 format. I think that's going to bring a lot of productivity improvements and certainly make life easier for people in the months ahead.
Well,
yeah, the other thing that's driving this, of course, is that client machines are coming with Office 2007 and they're attaching files and sending them off to CPA firms, not even thinking about the format change. And so at a very minimum, accounting firms are going to have to deal with the file format changes, even if they're not dealing with the actual software changes.
Exactly.
One final just consideration from a student perspective, of course, Microsoft has the promotion for the new Ultimate Edition student copy for $60. And, you know, if you've got anybody that's a student, that buy on new Office Ultimate is a killer buy at $60.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. You start sending your high school kids down to buy that stuff and get yourself tuned up. So let's move on. A couple of weeks ago, we were out in Las Vegas for CES. Dave, I missed you because you had a little travel story. You can tell us that story. And Brent, I did run into you. And Randy, you probably the smartest guy in the whole group. You decided not to attend this year. So, Dave, kick this thing off for us and tell us about your tale of woe trying to get there and what else is going on. How did CES go?
Well, it's actually not that uncommon a tale anymore. I got to the airport. Everything was fine right up until the moment we went to board the plane, and then the plane simply wasn't there. The flight was canceled. Everything else was booked. I wasn't even able to get there in time for the dinner, of course, and I missed your fabulous annual dinner. And that was probably the worst part of the show for me. It's interesting how much the show changed this year, and I think a lot of people had to, and I'm probably one of them, had to wait till I get home to realize, wow, this was a very different show. This was very much about television and video and about content this year. Was that your impression?
Lots of HDTVs, you know, that 150-inch and all that. And frankly, I'm over HDTV. You know, I mean, I've got it. It's fine. But, you know, I'm tired of looking at, you know, thousands of square feet of HDTVs. So that really didn't impress me. The only thing that impressed me was the kids that had the little clicker that went in and turned off thousands of TVs all at one time. That certainly got a lot of attention. But I didn't see at CES in my term, I didn't see anything that I called revolutionary. I saw a handful of interesting things, but nothing. You know, I picked up some things, but I didn't come out of there with anything that I was going, ooh, wow, this is going to be really cool. Did you see anything like that, Dave?
No, not like it's been in previous years. This actually, in my mind, was more a year in which they sort of stopped and caught their breath. And what I saw more was maybe a better sense of how all this new technology is going to be used. As we discussed earlier, for example, there is a huge interest now in packing all this technology into cars, into building video screens into the
right.
back seats
right.
and the GPS units. And
yep.
we can talk about that a little more, I guess, later on. But now you're seeing it all over the television ads. So it's technology in cars is going to become, I think, a big thing.
Right. So, Brent, you and I were at a couple of those press-only thing, showstoppers, and what did you see there? Anything that you liked?
You know, I'm kind of with you guys. There wasn't anything like astoundingly new from my perspective. It was kind of fun to see the Intel 45 nanometer chip, which is, you know, about the size of a slightly large pinhead, if you want to think of it that way. Moore's Law is obviously still alive, that they're putting the kind of processing power in that small of a space coming up. In the Microsoft area, there wasn't anything hugely new. They spent quite a bit of time talking about Windows Home Server, and I know you're going to talk about that in a second.
Well, they talked about that last year.
You know, they did, because it was brand new, but
exactly.
You know, it's a year old now. And
well, that, actually, it's about a month old.
Yeah, it took so long to actually hit the streets. I think that's probably why they led with that. The other thing that I thought was pretty interesting in the Microsoft area, and you and I have talked about this before, is the Microsoft Surface product.
I got
and,
to play with it.
Yeah, and I did too, and I thought that was really interesting. Although very expensive right now, I think probably going forward, that may even have some application in a paperless accounting firm, because you've got a tabletop touch screen type of device that you could, you know, use your hands to almost like you use your hands on an iPod, or I should say on an Apple iPhone, to bring documents up and move them around and share them with your customers, your clients, I should say. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I actually had a nice visit with the Surface product manager, and he came and asked me, you know, what I thought of it. And I said, you know, frankly, it's a solution in search of a problem, but you know, if we could get it eventually priced, you know, right, and to the point where you could put it in people's offices, you might have finally a real live desktop. You know, we talk about the desktop all the time as though our computer screen was the desktop, but you might have a desktop.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, for somebody to actually do annotations on tax return source documents on an embedded touchscreen that sits right inside the desk on the desktop, that has some pretty interesting connotations there.
Yeah, I think we'll be doing that. So, Randy, did you miss us at all?
You know, I'll have to say I did, but not horribly, because obviously my missed choice was to spend family time in very exceptionally good snow in Vail. So we got some good coverage there. But I think just as important from our vantage point, the G4 Gamers Network, if you will, had a summary every night of the key events of CES of the day. So we got to ski during the day and see the summary during the night. Dr. Bob really represented our K2 group, and Dr. Bob walked away with the same impression that you have gotten. He's got his summary written up on his 20 Seconds in the Future TSIF site. But bottom line was, nothing out of the ordinary, nothing exceptional new. So I actually was pretty pleased to be on the slopes.
Well, it was interesting. Bob was there and represented you guys. We decided that since you weren't there at dinner, Randy, that Bob and I each had an extra dessert in your honor.
And that's always appreciated.
But we did have an absolutely outstanding dinner at Wolfgang Puck's Spago. It was an amazing. Amazing dinner with an amazing group of guests, and that's up on my blog. You can take a look at it, but that was great fun. So.
Yeah, I think Dr. Bob's favorite piece, and I agree in retrospect with him, the Asus EEE Ultramobile PC.
Yep.
Turned out to be his favorite piece. That's actually been just favorably reviewed in the February Linux Journal. And, this whole initiative of these, let's call it the $100 laptops, which are really $200 laptops in effect, but that whole evolution is coming along nicely, and the volumes are clearly picking up a million-plus units already.
Interesting stuff. Well, I did want to kind of mention, we talked about this Windows Home Server. They announced it last year, and I was all excited about it last year, and I know, Brent, you were pretty impressed with it. And we talked about it through the year quite a few times, and now, by golly, it's finally shipped. I have one in my home. I love it. It came in. I took it out of the box, plugged it in. It sits over in a corner, makes a noise like a rock, and works perfectly. Everything I've asked it to do, it does perfectly. It pushes all my movies directly to my TiVo. It gives me remote access. It gives me automatic backup. All the things that it said. There was a little scare in there, Randy, that you and I talked about on some files that were maybe had the potential to be corrupt to get corrupted in a certain scenario, and they've evidently got that taken care of. And so I've got one in, and I know Brent's got one in. Randy, did you get
one? And mine's in, same basic experience, just like an appliance is supposed to do, runs pretty much without a lot of intervention.
Did either of you guys get the opportunity to plug in an extra drive, a USB drive?
I did that. I haven't done it on my production home server, if you will, because I have plenty of space. I built it that way. But when I was testing it last year, I did that on a couple of occasions. And essentially, home server just saw the extra space and gave me the option to add it to the drive pool, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, and it's it is pretty slick. And now they've with the latest download of their software, they've improved that a little bit, and they're actually now allowing you, when you plug that in, you can say I want to add this to my drive pool, which is what I did. Just said poof, there it was, and it gave me an extra. It happened to be a 300 gig little drive that I had sitting around, wasn't doing anything else. I thought I'd just plug it in over there, see how it worked, and it worked perfectly.
I have had an experience with a USB drive. When you plug it into one of your client machines on your home network, you get an immediate notification that the data on that drive hasn't been backed up, which that's the whole network health thing that is one of the advantages of Windows Home Server.
Right. But now you can take an external drive like that, plug it in, and Windows Home Server will jump up and say, do you want to add this to the pool, or do you want to back up your home server? and you can back up your whole home server to that drive, take the drive, you know, down to your office or down to the bank or whatever you want to do with it, and, you know, now you've got offsite backup too. So, interesting.
There is one thing that I wish they would build into it from a remote standpoint, and that is the ability to stream, you know, the video. You know, it's make that whole process a little bit easier.
Buy a flying box.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's busy season. Randy, are you out seeing firms? You're about done doing work with accounting firms, I would guess. Busy season is here. What are you seeing?
Well, an oddity on that is probably 3 years ago, firms actually desire visits during busy season for technology consulting, which seems so backwards to me, but I was actually in Syracuse, New York in a CPA firm last week. So, but busy season is clearly upon us. In fact, I guess I was in a CPA firm yesterday too. And, you know, bottom line is everything looks to be pretty stable. So far, no unusual things with, you know, drop ball that we talked about before the conversation started. But fundamentally, the applications seem to be out there, and no notable issues reported to date.
David, you hear anything?
No, I'm not hearing any negatives. It seems to be a little busier than it may have been last year. At least that's what firms are telling me. But they're not seeing major software glitches this year,
right? How about you, Brent? You're over there, and you see lots of firms. You're living in one. Everything start just on time. Everything just flowing along, right?
Yeah, I'd pretty much agree that the software, you know, has arrived on time and no major glitches. There was a non-software issue that I thought was kind of interesting with CCH. Their envelopes, the initially the U.S. Post Office decided that their envelopes were going to be considered packages and were charging higher postal rates to send those out. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah, I didn't see that particular one, but I feel for them because that actually happened years ago with some envelopes that the Thompson was using. And it was a little fire drill for a while. It was just a couple of renegade postmasters that didn't understand what the rules were, and then you have to go out and solve. I assume CCH was quick to solve that.
Yeah, they did. It sounds like exactly the same situation. They got a hold of whoever they needed to get a hold of and got it worked out, and they're back to being considered envelopes again. So.
Right. Well, I will tell you that there was a little bit of a fire drill over on the CCH small firm services side. That group, you know, with ATX and TaxWise group represents an awful lot of users, huge number of small firms, and they're busily consolidating things and moving things together, back room stuff mostly, but they've moved a bunch of sales and support people from up in Caribou, Maine, where they had these ATX people, down to a central spot in Georgia, and there were some fairly upset people, I guess, in the old, what I would call the old ATX community, and there's a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth there for a while. There's some interesting stuff on my blog, thetechgap.com, that kind of talks about that. I think it was a non-issue and looked to me like Jeff Gramlich and his team over there at CCH handled that just fine. And the important thing is not where people answer the phone, but what they say when they answer the phone.
Yeah, and you know, it turns out I've been to Caribou in the ATX days. I suspect you have been too, Greg. And it is a little different culture up in that space. It's hard to picture that east, west, or north is Canada.
Exactly.
So you know, you're very, very close up there. But you know, the cultural and the support people that I had met there, and just the environment, you know, very pleasant work environment. So you know, it's a little different, you know, being in Georgia versus Maine. But
right.
That comes with the growth of the business at times.
I pointed out, it'd be a whole lot easier to recruit people from Maine to Georgia in January You know, I mean, you got almost any place would look good in January from Caribou.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I lived in Caribou.
That's too bad.
Yeah, no, actually, I was up. I was stationed at Loring Air Force Base. I was the base information officer there for several years, and I knew Caribou very well. I was a denizen of USEF's restaurant, and I was there when the first McDonald's arrived, when they got cable TV. So,
well,
I can sympathize with people because you know you get trapped up there. You start thinking this is the most wonderful place in the world, and I honestly considered staying and living there until I woke up.
Yeah, it's a nice spot. Well, let's move on. I wanna we're running a little bit behind time here, so we've got this. We were going to talk a little bit about financial analysis software. I think we're going to skip that for this month, and we've got a listener on the line that's got a question, and I'm going to bring in Rick here and see if Rick, are you with us?
Yeah, Greg, I'm here.
Okay.
Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good day.
Guys, Rick's got some questions around contact management and stuff, so why don't you explain a little bit about what you're looking for, and we'll see if we can't point all this brain power at coming up with a solution for you.
Let me kind of define or describe myself, and that'll kind of give you a background to help me with my question, and hopefully my question will hit a lot of other people at home who are practitioners like me. When you start out, you're not really a technology guru, so you go find the programs that you like over the period of time. And I've been in business 25 years. For tax, I use Lacerte. For my contact management, I use a program called Goldmine, and it's kind of funny, y'all will laugh at this, but the reason I use Goldmine is back in the old days when all the viruses used to come out, they went out for the Microsoft products and they left Goldmine alone, so I stayed with that. And, of course, with time and billing, I have Creative Solutions, their practice solution. So I have a hodgepodge of different things, and what I'm really looking at is I really do a lot of stuff from a technology point of view. I mean, but I want to look in the future after tax season and kind of merge my tax, my billing, and my contact management programs so that when we send an email out, you know, it stores in a place that eventually, if I needed to track that time in a billing program, or if I wanted to look up a tax return while I was doing that. And I probably understand that I'm going to need to go to some integrated solution, which is probably would like you guys' opinion on. For a small firm, I have 7 or 8 employees. A lot of our clients are on QuickBooks. About 80% of them are on QuickBooks. About the other 25% we use Creative Solutions Accounting for. So that's me. And my problem is, from a technology point of view, where do I go? What's my next step to integrate all this stuff so I'm not so hodgepodge? And I'll listen.
Well, Rick, that's a great piece of background. And actually, I'm not too far from you today over in Plano. But I've had a firm who was a large Goldmine user. And in fact, I know the guys at Goldmine pretty darn well just from business relationships over the years. But understand the desire to go another direction. Certainly one option is doing a tighter integration with Outlook. And, you know, do you consider your firm marketing-based? In other words, are you actually using a contact manager or a CRM for outbound marketing, or what's your purpose in the contact management?
Purpose in contact management is in the huge amount of information that we get and have to deliver to clients on a timely basis.
Mm-hmm.
We use our contact manager A as a calendaring program, and that sets the pace for all the appointments in the office and then any information back and forth with clients. And then marketing would be one end of that, but probably nearer the latter end of that. That kind of help you?
Yeah, it does, because you know the cut of how you want to use that information and what you're trying to do with your clients is whether I drive firms towards the CRM type of approach or a contact management approach like you're used to at Goldmine,
right,
or whether I pull it over into the practice management system. So, you know, where you said, hey, look, we're basically a creative solution shop. What are you using for your practice management time and billing?
Time and billing, I'm using Practice Solution.
Yeah.
I'm kind of, and you guys, see if you'll appreciate this analogy. And I think it's a good analogy, and I may have it wrong, and you can tell me, but for a guy like me, there are several players out there. Let's call it Intuit is one player and Thompson is another. I'm sure there are other players, okay?
Yep.
And if you call one of them a Ford and one of them a Chevy, who do you like? And a guy like me, you like the first one that you had because it's so hard to change. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so what I find myself in is in tax, I've got Lacerte, which is Intuit. 85% or 80% of my clients have QuickBooks, and that's understandable, and we support that, and we do a great job at that, and that really fuels us. But I go back all the way to the 1040 solutions and, you know, Creative Solutions in its infancy before Thompson. And so we have the CSA product and the Practice Solution, and we use the depreciation. So I am kind of a mix of both, and probably am missing a mark somewhere by doing that.
Yeah, but see, where you're doing what I would call more of a best-of-breed approach, because,
yeah,
you know, firms either take a suite approach, which we broadly recommend, stay all in the Thompson family, stay all in the CCH family, but, you know, when you're playing in the Intuit game and there's really no practice management time and billing solution, that becomes a bit of an issue, and realistically, the things you're trying to work with, due date monitoring, scheduling of calendar, and so forth, there's not real clean integration from any of the practice management products today all the way out to the calendar level. So sometimes I'll go to the practice management solution and say, look, here, let's go this direction and go after it. But I think you'll be dissatisfied with the contact management based on what you've described so far if you're inside practice management. So
okay,
you still may be better served by actually doing a conversion from a Goldmine into perhaps Microsoft CRM with the Outlook integration, which will get you Exchange contacts, Outlook contacts all integrated together. But the danger there is your firm size, because the complexities of integrating and implementing that are tough. It works. I'm doing that in CPA firms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to a degree, sometimes the market you're in your case, you know, kind of the Dallas metro area, you're going to have more support than somebody would if they were out in West Texas, for example. So, you know, a CRM solution like a Microsoft CRM, there's a good gold mine to Microsoft CRM approach. You know, another one that could be a softer one, but I'm not sure I want to recommend it to you, is like a Salesforce.com, a hosted CRM type of approach. But, you know, there's nothing that comes to mind that says, in practice CS, how do I get this nice integration to do the contact management?
Well, Randy, let's... He's using Practice Solution,
yep,
which is the older of the Thompson products. They don't sell that anymore.
Right.
Their new product is Practice CS, which actually, in my opinion, has by far the best integration with Outlook. In fact, they're really the only ones that really do a good job of that.
Yep.
And Practice CS, you know, would do a great job, but I, you know, in order to really get full benefit of that, you should really be an UltraTax user and a file cabinet solution user, and it's a suite based world. So I would have a couple of thoughts of where I think your biggest pain might be coming from, Rick, is actually in the practice management world. I would give you two products to go take a look at. Well, first of all, you should look at the Practice CS thing from Thompson, because you're already kind of in that world. Take a look at that. It's, you know, it's pretty slick stuff. But there
Agreed.
Are two products out there for that are designed especially for small firms. And one is called Office Tools Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an amazing product for a small firm, does all of the things you're talking about, does a great job of managing calendars and all. It becomes the center point, does practice management, does time and billing, but also it's a practice manager. So it manages documents and all kinds of tools in there. It's not expensive. It's very, very well done. I'm really high on it for a small firm. It would quickly fall down and go boom in a firm of over maybe a dozen people. And I think Mike Giardino over there, if you called him and said, I've got a firm of 25 people, he'd go, you don't want to buy this. You know, that would be my guess. The other one that I'd suggest that you think about is the LexisNexis products, Time Matters and Billing Matters. You know, they were actually written originally, you know, over there for the attorney for the legal world, but an awful lot of accounting firms use the combination of those two, and they're very very customizable in terms of workflow, and so that the small firms can very quickly pick this thing up and say, well, this is how I do business, and plug it in and make it work.
Yeah, and see, Rick, on those, I actually do agree with Greg across that. I actually did an office tools review a week ago yesterday, so 8 days ago, and I think that's a good recommendation to pursue. And at the risk of putting too many products on your platter, in that same ilk is Tom Davis's products out of Valdosta, Georgia, the FirmWorks product, because at your level, that's reasonable.
Right, which sit on top of your practice management product.
That's correct. And then the other one that, you know, if you say, you know, I think I'm okay with my practice management, I really still want to be very CRM-like, you know, then I start going to more of the CRM products that would wrap around the Intuit world. So that's where the Legrands come into play in some of those.
Never heard of that Legrand. Huh?
Yeah. So, you know, that it turns out that there's probably the real question here is, is it truly a practice management issue, or is it really a CRM contact management issue for you? And once you know that, that puts you on the path of one of these two approaches, because the office tools, the practice CS, the FirmWorks, those are far more in the practice world, whereas the Microsoft CRM and the Legrand and those are really much more in the contact management CRM world, like your Goldmine has been for you.
And I think for my question, my answer to that question would be probably more in the practice end. I've got a good-sized practice. I'm kind of limited where I can grow.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of great clients, and I really look in my firm as just adding great clients but supporting those out. So the contact part of that is in the practice, managing what I have being where I need to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's office tools, looking at the practice, CS, the Thompson product, maybe even thinking about switching software, which doesn't scare me.
Yeah.
But let's step out of farther. You know, this will mess you guys up. I have a 2,000 square foot office attached to my house. I've kind of built a concept out here, Rockwall, east of Dallas, just east of where you're at. And and as I see myself growing, I can't really add more space here unless I add it on. But if I went out and did satellite offices and put this more internet based versus here, what might be your thoughts?
Well, you know, as you go down that line, then you've got two or three real straightforward approaches, I think. Because if you come to the Thompson suite and say, you know, Practice CS, this is going to get everything that I want done so I can upgrade, notice that they've got the virtual office offering, which basically lets you turnkey out most of the applications. But like most practices, the chances of you leaving Lacerte are probably pretty thin. So in that case, you actually almost wind up in a hosting service, somewhat like maybe real-time data services.
Uh-huh.
That will take every application that you've got in your office, either manage it in your firm for you, or completely outsource and host it for you. So notice that you basically eliminate the infrastructure of the firm, but you run all of the exact applications you're using today. And that allows you to, you know, have remote workers. Maybe you wind up with somebody over in the, you know, Fort Worth area, maybe growing the practice a little that way, or a little further north or a little further south. And you're not really worried now by your space constraints, and you can let other people build their client relationships out of their home-based offices too.
And we're all going to be doing that 5 or 10 years anyway.
That's where I see it going, and that's really intriguing to me. So as I'm making these changes, I want to keep that in the forefront of my mind, is I don't want to limit myself. And
right.
How do you see speed on those things? Is speed today, if I have a T1, which I have a T1 to my office, if you have T1 speed, is it just as seamless as it seems it should be?
Rick, let me help you with that. I, you know, as you'll recall, I was with Thompson when we built. In fact, that virtual
right.
office thing actually came out of my team. We built it probably a little bit too early, undoubtedly a little bit too early, but it's rock solid. I got a huge number of firms using it and stuff. And the beauty uh-huh. of it is the processors that they're running on are great big honking quad Xeon processors. Yeah, way more horsepower than you're going to have in your office. And in many cases, the response time is faster than if you did it locally.
Yeah.
Wow.
And in the Dallas metro area, because your communications can be so cheap, just depending on where you're at, but I know other clients here, you know, are telling me they're getting 10 and 20 megabit service for $25 and $29 a month. So you need to look at some of those metro Ethernet offerings in the Dallas Metroplex. I think mm-hmm. you might find that you actually have better response with that methodology than with your current approach. Don't want to overstate that, but it's pretty darned attractive.
You know, and if it's not today when I do make these changes, it's going to get better and better and better.
Yeah, and, you know, really, all of us, I think, would prefer not to have a lot of infrastructure around, but it's just been the way that we've gotten there, and we believe that this transition will continue, and as the reliability improves, you know, the steps just get further and further down the road. There's been a pretty big shift in the last 18 months on the acceptability of these hosted or software-as-a-service type of approaches as compared to, you know, doing it in-house. And again, one of the issues that you're going to have is getting the right support out to your office to get everything installed correctly versus these other guys do it on a routine basis. And again, from growing your practice, you know, the commutes across Dallas can be pretty ugly. So, you know, if you can keep people closer to their homes or closer to their clients, you're going to get more billable time because they're not spending it on the, you know, on the interstates.
Not frustrated either.
Yeah, I'm not near as frustrated.
Before we let you go, I want to make sure that we now that we've given you a couple of opinions, I'll make sure that Brent and David get a chance to hop in so you can have three or four different opinions. Brent, you got any advice? Anything that we said that you would disagree with, or anything that you want to add?
Well, I think probably the short answer from me and it would be to upgrade Practice Solutions to Practice CS. I think I heard at least Greg say that, and I think Randy mentioned that as well. Practice CS has some CRM capabilities. They're not great at this point, but they're getting better. It is crafted on the .NET platform, so it's gonna play well with Outlook, which is what you ultimately want it to do. And I think that product is going to get better over time, and especially since you've already built your practice management and practice solutions, that's going to be the easiest upgrade path for you. And I think it's going to accomplish your goals probably a little bit easier than trying to rip and replace.
Would you think internally or let them host it or no preference?
Yeah, Rick, I actually think that's it's really a separate question, but I can tell you if you talk to anyone that's using an outsourced process like that, whether it happens to be Virtual Office or a bunch of other ones that do that, I mean I never meet anybody that's unhappy. I mean they're just not. This is a great solution for an awful lot of people. So I would certainly look at it, and when you're going to make that sort of change, it's a great time to think about that. Dave, any parting words for Rick before we move on?
No, I also am a big fan of Practice CS and the whole CS professional suite, the direction they're going and the integration they're doing with the office. What struck me first in what he had to say, but then he sort of altered it a little bit, was I got the sense that maybe one of the time and billing add-ins for Outlook might best suit his needs. But as he discussed it more and outlined his needs a little more, I think Practice CS is the best way to go. I would just say to him, you know, I've been through the gold mine, the ACT, and the Outlook transitions, and you need not fear Outlook. It's the direction I think most of us are going to be going in the years ahead if you're not there already. I think you'll find with very little adjustment, that it's a pretty comfortable thing and a pretty pretty powerful contact management system, especially if you get into some of the customization and customized field elements of it.
Yeah, I'd just throw one thing in, Rick, before we cut you loose. This is my opinion. I'm the world's expert on my opinion. You have a wonderful tax product right now in Lacert, no question about that. But if you're going to move over to the Thompson world, the UltraTax product is also a wonderful product. There isn't 50 cents difference between those two products. They operate a little bit differently. You're talking about a BMW and a Mercedes. They're wonderful products, and either one of them would do just fine for you. And actually, your perceived level of pain and change is probably an order of magnitude greater than the pain really is. I mean, I see people make that change all the time from one to the other. I'm not saying one is better than the other. They're both great products. But if you're going to be in the suite, be in the suite, because that's where you're going to get the huge benefit. And I think that's what I heard you say too, Randy, wasn't it, being the suite?
Yeah, it really is. And in fact, that's one of the things that I hope Intuit would cure shortly, is this lack of practice management time and billing. You know, they're going to make attempts in that area, I believe. But, you know, if you're trying to be in the suite of Lacert and QuickBooks, you know, you've got this missing practice management piece that's really needed in a dire way. So the alternatives from the third parties that we've given you there are about the best that you can do. But the reverse of what you've just claimed, Greg, I think is true. When you look at ease of use, the UltraTax product and the Lacert products are the two easiest to use products out there with that type of horsepower. And, you know, I think comparable feature sets and so forth. So, you know, in this case, both are good and the integration value is high.
Okay, Rick, I hope we've answered your questions. I appreciate you joining us, and keep us posted. Let us know how that goes. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, everyone.
Mm-hmm. Glad to help.
Okay, let's move on here pretty quickly. We've only got about 5 minutes left here, so we're gonna skip a couple of topics, and we're gonna give Brent just real quickly a server 2008 topic of the month to throw out there, and then we'll be wrapping up, and we'll carry over these things that we were going to talk about till next month, because we've just plain burned up too much time. So Brent, we've been talking about server 2008. You assure us that there's enough meat there to talk about it for a little bit every month. What's the hot news for January?
Well, just in general, Server 2008 is in their final phase prior to release. They're in their release candidate phase. That's just in passing. I wanted to mention, you know, we've talked about some of the GUI end user type enhancements. I wanted to just briefly mention this month kind of one of the under the hood enhancements that sometimes we don't think about, and that is the complete rewrite of the TCP/IP network stack. We all depend on connections to other machines, and the rewrite of the TCP/IP network stack has just produced some amazing results in terms of performance. And just to give you an idea, you know, Microsoft does a lot of dogfooding of their own stuff, and the MSN Virtual Earth team did a test transferring just a little over a 10 gig file. They were stitch files, a collection of 10 stitch files that they use for Virtual Earth, and they transferred those from the Tukwila data center up in Washington to the Redmond data center. When they transferred them using Windows Server 2003 on each end, the total transfer took 5 hours and 40 minutes. When they did the same transfer using Windows Server 2008 on both ends, that transfer took 7 minutes and 45 seconds.
That's amazing. I heard Paul Thurrott talking about that the other day.
An amazing
thing.
And the reason that's possible is this rewrite of the TCP/IP stack. They now have the ability using TCP/IP to actually dynamically change the what's called the receive window. So it was limited to 64K previously. Now they can dynamically change that, and so the receive machine is able to take a lot more information in. The second big change in the networking stack is the rewrite of what's called Server Message Block 2.0, and that's how that's a built-in protocol that's been around for Server Message Block 1 has been around for 15 years. If you remember back to Microsoft LAN Manager and Windows for Workgroups, that's the protocol that is in Windows Server 2003. It's very old and it has some problems. And so with Windows Server 2008 and Vista, Server Message Block 2.0 is included in those products. And so when you have Server 2008 Vista machines on the same network, you're going to see some significant improvements in transfer rates of files and just overall performance.
So those are things that for the average firm, a lot of the average people that were out there listening to us right now just sat and looked at their computer and said, "What in the world is he talking about?" But the answer to that is you're talking about under the hood stuff that when in a year or two you plug in Server 2008 hardware and you plug in your new Vista machines, they're just plain going to run way faster, going to move data way faster. Is that what I hear you, Sam?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so when you talk about compelling reasons to move, you know, obviously time is money, and Randy talked about this earlier with spending $30 on a product that's going to make a staff person more productive. These are the compelling reasons to think about a move.
So that's why, Randy, I've been listening to you this year say, don't buy anything this year and just kind of sit back, because next year is going to be a lot better time sometime, you know, after, you know, next summer after this tax. I should say, quit saying next year because it's now this year. That's kind of what you were saying, right?
It really is. And when you take a look down this Windows Server path, you know, there's 8 additions coming, and, you know, those parts of the infrastructure will be better. You know, obviously Intel introduced 16 processor chips at CES, but we know that the server chips are coming, and the next generation of Intel chip beyond the Pinruns are also going to be delivered later in the year. So, again, this is 2008 is now the convergence year where all this stuff should be out, be there long-term enough that it's stable. It's time to, you know, get off the pot and make your move.
Well, this stuff is moving fast. And Brent and I were talking yesterday. You pointed out that Exchange 07 now has SP1 out. That's certainly mainstream now. And
Vista Service Pack 1 is going to release at the same time that Server 08 does, so about another month.
Right. So, you know, this stuff is moving along. Well, guys, we're just about out of time here. I want to ask Dave McClure to give us just a little taste of something that we're going to talk about next month in more detail. I saw more cars out there at CES than I've ever seen before. Tell me what that's all about, Dave, and what are we going to talk about next month?
We're really going to talk about how technology is moving into the car, Greg, and you're right. We saw it all over the place. I was amused by the fact that, once again, Microsoft has a critical shortage of product names because their new system for automobiles is called Sync. I don't know why they keep retreading names and using them for different products, but it's kind of amusing. Now we have to figure out which Sync Microsoft is talking about. But the products are stunning. And, you know, you posed the question to me earlier, should you go out and buy the car just to get the technology? If they form exclusive deals, you may have to, but for my money, I'd retrofit. It looks like a better deal.
Well, it'll be interesting to talk about some of those things, and Sync is interesting. I'm glad they named it Sync instead of Bob. That probably makes more sense.
Yeah.
So guys, we are scheduled next month, February 20th, 3:30 Eastern Standard Time for Tech to Go, episode 14. Again, thanks to all of you. Big thanks to our friends out in New Jersey at ADP. Good stuff, and I'd certainly encourage you, if you're thinking about payroll, take a look at the stuff that they've got. I've certainly been impressed with it over the years, and I know many of the panel members have too. So help us out there, and all of you guys have a great and safe rest of January. Be sure to take your sweeties out for Valentine's Day, and we'll see each of you, literally, I guess not literally see you, but we'll talk to you on February 20th. Thanks, Brent, David, Randy. Appreciate your time.
Thanks.
Good day.
Thank you.
Bye.
That wraps up this edition of Tech2Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust. This has been a podcast provided by the CPA Technology Advisor at the intersection of technology and public accounting.